microscopic tag being implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that. You will rule on that, mark my words, before your tenure is over.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex.
I really do wonder sometimes what we're becoming in this country.
It's not left. It's not right. It's the state versus you. Alex Ansari, Outside the Box.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. This is Outside the Box. We're coming to you live the early first week of December, of course, getting ready for the Christmas break, which I'm sure many of us are ready for. One of the articles we're going to talk about today, just to kick off the program, marchers confront the New York City police after shooting victim is buried. Now, those of you remember that a man was gunned down in a hail of 50 police bullets last week. He was buried as hundreds of angry demonstrators honored him with a moment of silence before confronting police outside a Queens precinct house. The demonstrators taunted police standing inches away from rows of officers, daring the police to lay a hand on them. Some of the crowd held signs reading, quote, "death to the pigs," end quote, and "shoot back." 50 shots from the New York cops was the chant that the crowd yelled moments before the moment of silence. One of the Black civic leaders there, Malik Zulu Shabazz, says, quote, "We didn't come here to start any violence. The New York Police Department started the violence." The march of outrage organized by the new Black Panther Party came 1 week after 23-year-old Sean Bell was killed and his friends Trent Benfield and Joseph Guzman were wounded when police opened fire on the unarmed trio outside a strip club in New York City. The demonstration yesterday began outside the club, moved around the corner to the site of the shooting, and continued to the precinct. Now, this morning, I went on CNN.com and I took a look at the recent interview between Larry King and the woman who was going to marry him. You see, this man was killed on his wedding day, on top of the fact that he was just killed, period. It's the fact that he was killed on his wedding day. Now, I don't know whether it was the programming, this indoctrination in our society, that you can't fight the police, that the police state's okay, that this is what freedom is. But she wasn't all that concerned. In fact, the headline read, the woman was not very concerned or angry with the police over the decision. That crowd, that march that I just spoke of, does not include this woman. So the question I'm asking myself is, why is that? Why is there a hesitation to speak up when the state, the police department, effectively murders the man that you just said you're going to spend the rest of your life with? Now, how is that normal? I want to also talk about, because this ties in with something that happened back in 1998. Thursday night, I met a murder victim. I don't meet a lot of murder victims in my life, but this woman lost her son. I believe it was her only son, to the Los Angeles County Police Department. They fired 160 bullets at him back in 1998 during a routine traffic stop. I mean, this is effectively destroying families. This is the kind of stuff that young people over America don't really give a damn about or care about. The violent video games, now that's important. The same thing being sold to program you into accepting this kind of reality. And people wonder why ADD is rampant now in today's youth. But back to the issue at hand. 160 to 200 bullets fired at this man. And I remember she brought in a dummy, a stuffed mannequin, to show with little drawings and bullet marks what a body actually would at least look like in terms of blood after that many bullets actually entered the torso, the legs, the head, everything. We'll get into that situation on that dark night of 1998 when I come back. Stick around. the center is every human being at those moments of his life when he resigns momentarily from the herd and thinks for himself. Every man takes the limits of his own field of vision for the limits of the world, just food for thought. History, for better or for worse, repeats itself. When I look at the situation, the details of the incident on March 27th, 1998, this woman, Thursday night, right before, like 30 minutes before showtime, and I'm getting ready for my interview with Vicki Karp, who lives down in Austin, Texas. She wrote a book called Hacked Elections. By the way, it's on my website, that interview as well. I'm trying to get ready for this, and in walks this woman who knows this girl who directs my show, and she's been trying to get a hold of me for some time. And it gets very overwhelming because, you know, I get so many emails, not a lot of phone calls because I don't have a public number that I have posted. And I do like to get contacted. I can't help everyone or be everyone's spokesman for their issue, but it's really tragic when someone gives me the information that I'm about to share with you about something they firsthand experienced, not something they read from Reuters or APs, you know, things that I'm doing, but ways that their family, on a very deep and fundamental personal level, the way their family has been affected by the incremental police state that a lot of Americans don't want to admit exists unless they are affected. On March 27, 1998, in Los Angeles, California, Michael William Buzz Arnold was shot to death by 22 police officers from the Hawthorne City Police Department in L.A. County Sheriff Area Region. Also, the California Highway Patrol was involved as well. The shooters emptied their high-velocity military-type weapons, reloaded, and emptied them again, firing in excess of 300 rounds in a quiet, sleeping community. Now, 165 bullets hit the unarmed man, tearing his body to shreds. 55 of the shots were fatal. Here's just a rundown of the weaponry employed by the police. Full-body armor. Some of the firearms that were used included 16 different Beretta 9mm weapons, guns, one Colt semi-automatic, 223 REM, one Heckler & Koch submachine gun, 9mm, two Remington 12-gauge shotguns, and some also Smith & Wesson shotguns as well. Very tragic. There's also rumor of an AR-15 being involved in the murder, which is what this is. I'm also looking at before me a diagram of the bullet projectiles, the angle at which they struck the victim, Mr. Michael William Buzz Arnold. I went on the internet to look and see if Alex Jones has written anything. I didn't see anything on his website. However, the Rob Revere Network did do a little editorial after speaking with the mother a little longer than I had. She also lives here in Portland. Her name is Constance Flum. And in the recount between the interview between her and Rob Revere, when this was done, it has been revealed that the military-style assault, once it was over, the police went door-to-door demanding that citizens tell them right away what they had seen and heard. They instructed the citizens to stay in the house, away from the windows, and remain there until the scene was secured. By the way, citizens should never comply with these kinds of demands. Then the police searched the dead man's new white Lincoln Town Thank you. You know, I think everybody just wants to rule the world sometimes. I don't know where we got disconnected at. Sorry about that. Thank you for staying with us. We still do produce more truth and information than the networks. With all the glitz and glam and ISDNs and the money behind them, we still have the truth, don't we? And that means a lot more. That means a lot more than the fluff, the spin that we see on the picture-perfect HD TV. Or there's also HD radio coming as well. Crystal clear radio, right? But again, more lies, more distortion. Well, back to this situation. There are 70 or more police cars involved in the situation. All these different weapons that I spoke of. Bottom line is they went, talked door-to-door to the citizens, making sure that they knew what they saw, what they heard, once they realized what they did and who they just killed. Someone that was not a junkie, not a criminal. In fact, a highly young, successful businessman. They realized that perhaps they had a look, made it look like perhaps he was coming after the police. So they went through his car and they found a BB gun. And they tried to link that. Although the BB gun was not on his person at the time. Supposedly, there's a weapon that was found near his body, yet the weapon was in perfect condition while his body was blown to smithereens. And eyewitness reports note that he did get out of the car, and as he turned around, at that point, the first bullet was fired, blowing his brains completely out on the first shot. So that's a bit macabre to talk any more about the deceased. But here I have one of the biggest police state stories, I would say, of the last 2 weeks. One that I've heard a lot about from people that don't look at this news a lot. I use that as a good a gauge to see what is the top story of the day in terms of police state America. When you look at what other people are seeing, what other people are aware of that don't go to the websites that we go to, that are just reading the standard mainstream channels, publications, networks, the same information. In terms of just the federalization of the airports, you can talk about that for hours and hours and hours. I would rather not. I've done a lot of shows previously on surveillance. You can look it up. But one of the new ones, surveillance measures that they are implementing incrementally, bit by bit, at the airports, is this new X-ray technology. Now, there's nothing actually new about it. It's been around for a few years. I remember reading it back in 2003, an article about Orlando. These X-ray machines were, in fact, you're not clothed. You're not clothed. And they're looking for more than metal. So you are literally a nude body. Just a nude body when you walk through the new X-ray machines. They're not every airport yet, but they are spreading. But there's a new war as well. It's not just a war on terror. Apparently, it's also a war on, cream-filled donuts. Now, does that sound like freedom? How free would you feel? So you're going to leave Texas and you go to New York for some sort of event. You're going to go see the family over in Missouri or somewhere else. And you got your Krispy Kreme donut on your persons, you being the suspect. And then you're asked to not take that up on board, to show what's inside the donut. Or if you resist, if you talk back, if you show anger, that of course the other cameras will pick up. They'll pick up for their mind reading cameras, behavior reading cameras. We'll try to read your mind, read your thoughts, put you in the camp, in the bracket, in the box of being a potential threat by showing anger over not being able to take a donut on board. Think about what kind of situation this is really going to feel like. How American is this going to feel once you're going through that, once these measures are taking place at your airport? Not only the X-rays, but I mean, come on, no donuts? Well, this is already happening. Because, of course, you know how dangerous two donuts could be, especially when you mix a lemon meringue with a Boston cream. It's very explosive. But beyond being explosive in terms of diarrhea, I don't see how there is a nation, a national emergency, a nation that would be afraid of something like this. The Register we're a few of their guys. We're not able to take on the donuts, those that wrote this report. We're not, on further questioning, given any information or evidence to prove how donuts are going to cause an explosion, how physically it's possible. But none of what I'm reading, none of the news of the day that I'm sharing with you actually has any sanity to it. No, it does feel and look to be very normal. This looks normal to me because I understand why it's happening. It's no longer a surprise. But still, it's not normal in terms of the way things should be, in terms of the things that we should accept. In fact, these things are very horrific. And we're going to get into the next article in just a moment. One you will not believe. We'll be right back. You know, it's like playing ViewMaster. It's like the old ViewMaster we used to have when we were kids. You know, the whole little red thing that we stick in front of our face when we were about 8 years old, some of us. you'd put in a different slide, and a different image would be seen. That is exactly how it is looking at this news. Look at the news that I am bringing to the table, that a lot of other hosts are bringing on networks similar to this network as well. And also those that aren't with the network at all. All this different information, the bloggers. It's the bloggers, George W. Bush calls it, the people that are causing his demise. Well, we may be very active in implementing the information war, but he and he alone is responsible for his own decisions. It is not the fault of the bloggers. This is something, my friends, that my grandmother is very old. She's very old-school Democrat, very stuck in the left-right paradigm. And a lot of people like that, if you probe them, Republicans, fearmongers, I don't mean to blacklist, I should say neocons to be more appropriate, because we don't get involved in the left-right box here on this show. They do on some others, on Air America and whatnot, not here. But you have people like neocons, warmongers, that try to intimidate the other Democrats into going along with the gang mentality, the group think. Well, that's exactly some of the things that we're looking at with this next top story from the Associated Press. Headline reading, Hitler Youth Protest Buttons Are Now Contested. This has taken place in New Jersey. Believe it or not, the parents of two students threatened with suspension for donning buttons depicting Hitler Youth are suing, claiming the boys' free speech rights were violated, which they are. By the way, these buttons aren't even pro-Nazi Germany. You see, these buttons, these kids started wearing them. This is in Newark, New Jersey, because they are protesting the fact that they are preparing the mandatory... the school's preparing for the mandatory uniform policy for grades K through 8 that was adopted in September. Well, they got these buttons that have the words "No School Uniforms" with a slash over a superimposed photo of young boys wearing identical shirts and neckerchiefs. Okay? Kind of reminiscent of Nazi Germany, the Aryan youth, loyal to the Fuhrer. Similar to the fear that we have working in the White House at the moment. So very, very interesting indeed. They were comparing what the school is doing, which I believe to be wrong, telling you, first, our system tells you you have to be at school or the parents can go to jail. If they're going to go to school, they basically lose a right over what they do with their physical body if they don't have a choice over what clothing they wear. Because so, they were trying to make political statement, these young kids were, about how they felt about Nazi Germany and the perils they could see it even then at a young age, and them having to be forced to wear these certain uniforms, and of course give the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think there is something blasphemous about comparing something like the Bill of Rights, the Founding Fathers, the Pledge of Allegiance, things that have an allegiance to this country, and putting it alongside people that tell you how to think, how to act, and how to worship this current system, this current administration. Because you have a lot of people still to this day in 2006 that are caught up in the quote-unquote patriotic fever, psychosis, hypnotic trance. Where are the Bill of Rights? And we've talked about this a lot, so we won't spend a lot of time on it. Where are the Bill of Rights? Where this concept of God-given human rights is forgotten and literally replaced through the remolding and mind-washing process. So when you see dictatorship, you think totalitarianism, you see this top-down pyramidal structure of power implementing its will upon the American people. Many Americans still think they're free. Because how can Americans rebel against something if they are caught in an illusion and believe that they have choice, that they have freedom? One of the items that I was talking about last night, or yesterday morning, and I'll follow up on it, is how this Illuminati, this elite pyramidal structure, stays on top of the information war, the psychological warfare game that is being played out, and that it's constantly controlling and shifting the opposition. Understanding at a root, fundamental level how we think, how we feel. This is very serious, folks. We've talked about profiling on a psychological, deep psychological level. So they know how you feel, a lot of you, and where you will resist and where you won't resist. And they know there are people like us that will never, ever, ever give up, and that we know what this government is doing. But they know that most people don't care, that they have people in their pocket. They have control of people through Fox News and CNN. Not that these networks have power, but people give their power away, and that is key. So people give their power away. If they're able to hold the minds of Americans and keep their entertainment level beyond that of a sixth grade level, and maintain this ADD collective conscious state of mind, then they've won. That's what we're really fighting for. This is a battle for the hearts and minds of Americans, those that understand what's really going on and those that don't. And we'll pick up on that when we come back right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Give me a call at 1-800-313-9443.
I'll keep my eyes on the Saturday skies. Tough time, twist and twist and turn. Now this is my
bridge. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. We've got a long segment coming up right here. And on the topic of the long segment, I think I'll get real candid, talk a little more honestly. I'm going to go through a couple articles and talk a little bit about some of the things going on with me, some of the things that I'm looking at, because some of this information gets so redundant, yet it is so fresh because so many new things are happening every day. So we still need to focus on the positive, but just be realistic about the solution. So before I get to that, let me go through two articles. I meant to cover this one last week, but didn't get to it. UN troops face child abuse claims. Now this takes me back. This takes me back to those allegations, those things we've heard about the UN, but kind of wondered if they were really true. Mm-hmm. Well, according to, and this came out Thursday last week from the BBC, children have been subjected to rape and prostitution by United Nations peacekeepers in Haiti and Liberia. A BBC investigation has found girls have told of regular encounters with soldiers where sex is demanded in return for food or money. A senior official with the organization has accepted the claims are credible. The UN has faced several scandals involving its troops in recent years, including a DR Congo pedophile ring and a prostitution tracking ring in Kosovo. The Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations acknowledges that sexual abuse is widespread, saying, quote, "We've had a problem probably since the inception of peacekeeping, problems of this kind of exploitation of are of vulnerable populations, you know, third world populations, people that cannot, girls that cannot defend themselves from the predator. So, of course, they call this, quote, rampant. Now, I remember hearing about NATO troops as well. And, of course, there are all the stories. I don't need to talk about that today, about what has happened in Iraq. Some of the more popular stories. You know, we've seen situations where people have gone ahead and filmed themselves taking part in the rapes, taking part in these horrific events. So it definitely shows that something's clearly wrong, but one good piece, I think, in the right step. And we see a lot of people remaining quiet about these issues, about our involvement around the world. Now, mind you, this last issue is part of the big picture, being the UN. UN troops face child abuse claims, not United States. And so you hear so many people talking about giving the UN more power, given the UN, because they're trying to also build their own world army force within the UN, their peacekeeping, which is separate from NATO. That's actually a separate jurisdiction, still called quote-unquote peacekeeping. They still want to build that up, make that larger, yet they say this sexual abuse problem is rampant. So I don't see how someone could say we have a problem with sexual abuse in the UN with the peacekeeping troops, and say you want to make them much bigger, as many liberals do. That is, people that are against Bush, that have bought the lie, the ultimate spin, that everything that's happening is about Bush, which it's not. So you can see this issue is really bizarre, and it makes you go, wow, we really are living in the Twilight Zone. Now, this next article, like I said, it's good news or bad news. It depends how you look at it. It's good in the terms that Portland, which is my city, the city council, has now passed an Iraq war resolution. Portland has joined more than 200 cities across the country in passing a resolution calling for an end to U.S. involvement in the war in Iraq. The resolution was introduced by City Commissioner Randy Leonard and sponsored by more than 30 organizations. Now, Randy Leonard, by the way, for those of you that are Portlanders listening to the show, don't know why, but I don't particularly like the man. I've been before city council before. I was there with one man who was asking the DA there and the prosecutor's office to physically manifest and show the documentation that you have to have a driver's license to drive a car. That there's actually a law that states that. They were very rude to me, looking down upon me. This was about 2 years ago. I didn't have a large television presence then locally. But I think I would get more respect today if I were to go back, because they do appear on Access sometimes, watch Access, and they also stood behind Access and passed a resolution to big media as well. So we have good things happening here. And so I, believe it or not, am looking at myself here, maybe the one with the attitude problem with Randy Leonard. But there's something about him, and there's something about Potter that I don't trust. Don't ask me why, and I'm not the only one that feels that way, but I will give him credit for that. And there's no bad news in this article. There's nothing negative about their resolution. But let's also observe why it takes so long, 5 years into this, for a city to pass a resolution against the war. Was there not one before? Now, a lot of us know by now the city has no power in terms of what is being respected. Are people going by the law? Technically, the state has a certain amount of power. But when it comes to whether or not we get out of Iraq, none of us are going to be able to force, with just a few of us fighting, with just a few of us, that is, force the federal government, which does not respect the people, to pull out of Iraq. That we may think, technically, because we have a constitution, and we are entitled to that, that they should obey what we say. But they're not going to. They're gangsters. They're not playing by the law. You're thinking in terms of the law. These people aren't thinking in terms of respecting the law. They're just going around it. And you're saying, yes, you're going around it. We're calling you on it. We're calling this a dictatorship. No, it's not. End of story. That's actually how this is operating. And now we find ourselves back to how things would change, what situations, what factors would have to be predominant in our society for change. And again, we find ourselves coming back to the economic collapse and, of course, the belly. Hitting people where it hurts, where there's hunger, when families are starving. Now, a lot of you are wondering where I came from. We'll talk about this for the next 10 minutes. Why did this guy, who's younger than the rest, start this program called Outside the Box? And I think I'll do an extended version of this maybe next year, because I don't like to talk a lot about myself and dilute the message. But I basically got into this, like a lot of you did, watching, I don't want to say the towers collapse, but the 9/11 footage for weeks and days after 9/11, which was not a good time in my life. Dealing with the issue of being of mixed race in a world of racism, where my father is from Afghanistan, born and raised in Kabul. Left Kabul in 67, met my mom in German class here. My mom is a German, Austrian descent from her grandfather's side, from her father's side, Welsh and Dutch from my grandmother's side, on my mother's side. So I was mixed with these different things, and they were divorced. And I went through my whole life, I'll get into some of this another time, but I went through my whole life trying to figure out who I was in a world of confusion, in a world where my dad really wasn't there. He was having his own issues with drinking and whatnot and learning to accept the fact that he was divorced by my mother. Fast forward to 9/11, a lot of things had happened between my teenage years and 9/11. With moving out of the house, being enrolled in 6 high schools in a single year, not having a comfort, a sense of community, the tribal feeling of family, because I really wasn't around family. Our family, my mom's side, which I lived with my whole life, was broken up from within. No government involvement there. Now everybody, you know, just decided to divorce each other and move on to different areas, and we all lived in a nice $500,000 estate down in Aurora, Oregon, that my grandfather built with his own hands in 1960, a World War II veteran, flew B-29s. And in 93, when I was 13, we got to learn to move to the big city and learn to live in the cubicles known as apartments, because they decided they were going to sell it, because they were going to get divorced as well. The good old American way, and chasing of the good old American dollar. So my life changed at that point. And once you go from situation and an environmental change, you learn incrementally about the world you live in, how people perceive the world around you. As you become older, being 12, 13, 14, 15, in today's age, you're bombarded with so many messages of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, for that matter. Young people receive so much propaganda, but a lot of it, coming from someone who was a teenager, a lot of the spin defining what you are isn't really not necessarily coming from the media. It's coming from your peers. And so I was moving around into these different environments, from Portland to moving in with my grandmother in Longview to moving into a high school in Queens, New York for 2 weeks. I guess on another show I'll explain why I was moving so much. But basically I wasn't getting along with my parents. I did not do drugs. I just happened to talk back a lot. So I was in the rebellious phase. And I move on to live in Virginia. We're outside D.C. until we came back to my hometown now of Portland, Oregon, the only city that I've been comfortable in. And I learned at an early point about family breakup, about lack of communication skills, conflict resolution, things like that from these different weird situations, and anger I was dealing with as a teenager, and things like that. Being young is strange, but my personal experience being the situation I was in with 9/11 happened. My father had already left Portland, went back with his new wife to Virginia. I'm stuck alone here. And I was going through my own bit of depression, which I'll just kind of leave at that. And let's just say I experienced the party of life because I sought escape, and I sought it through the most extreme of ways. And that was a life I experienced prior, to that time frame. 9/11 happened. That pattern had continued. and continued and continued and continued. Now, behind the scenes, my parents are gone. And I'm seeing friends around me going through traumatic things in their lives as well. It was like energetically, there were all these things going on the planet at that time. I'm seeing friends get hooked on meth. I'm going through my own things. I had my problems with the law during that time as well. And I had learned what it's like to be young, to have no direction, to feel like you have no voice, to actually be a racist against yourself as well. Yes. I learned from my own programming how to accept the negativity of the world around me firsthand. That's why I speak with so much passion, because I lived a nightmare in my own heart and in my own head. And I learned how to work out of that. And it never ends. The fight, the struggle, I'm getting sidetracked, but the trying to be recentered and understand what is reality, to constantly look for, that doesn't end. You never reach this point, I believe, of enlightenment where you know it all. Life is constantly a journey. I can look back at the situations now, the loneliness and the stuff I go through still to this day, stuff that hasn't been dealt with family and whatnot, and realize that life, like Bill Hicks says, is just a ride. And sometimes we take life and ourselves, and I think sometimes this news, too damn seriously, and we forget to smile. But back to my story. It was the racism in the aftermath of 9/11. It was this buildup of the police state that I also saw firsthand, that I also experienced firsthand in my own way prior to 9/11. The way they treat you, the way they talk to you, the way they cuff you with your hands behind your back. It's the incremental training of the young of America to be slaves, to be obedient, to not fight anymore. To, if you have a problem, you call the cops. You know, and with the Illuminati and with the New World Order aside, our society has become so far out of balance. For young people out there, without a good family structure, without being in the right relationship, there are so many ways a young man, a young woman, can fall into a trap, can fall into a pitiful state of despotism in their own world. Where if it's not drugs that takes them out, it's another form of escape, where their mind becomes their warden. They become a prisoner upon their own volition. Whether it be shopping, whether it be media, whether it be computers, and we're going to see a lot of that. And we're seeing it now. We are seeing it. But we're going to see it in ways we didn't think we'd see it. Just in the next decade, to see people literally recreate themselves into the new humans. So I think a lot of us, when you think about it, people wonder, who is this guy talking? Where is he coming from? Is he Al-Qaeda? Is he Al-Qaeda? Is he working for the government? Why does he say the things he says? And why doesn't he agree with everything that I say? You know, my friends, I listen to people on this network that say things I don't agree with. And it's okay. And I don't need to repeat the things that they say just to say it. You know, there's so much growth involved in this that is so very personal. And so very real at the same time, that you listen to it and you realize that is that person's perspective. And I think about that person who said that thing that I consider to be highly offensive, sometimes racist. And I ask myself, why did he say that? And what kind of life or experience? If you look at the whole, you would talk about spirituality and forgiveness, and really saying, I love everyone, understanding that vibration of love, understanding where that person's coming from, what demographic they're in, what part of the planet, what part of the United States they're living in, the general consensus in that area, and then also be considerate and compassionate to the issues they face in their own region, like people living in Texas with the immigration issue, the things that people in other states don't understand because they're not there. So people have to be understanding And that has been one of my journeys. Because I think off the set, off the show, away from the mic, I could be kind of a jerk to some people. And that's been one of my pitfalls, because the way I look at sometimes, hey kid, the world's harsh. Sink or swim. Hope you'll be able to swim, but I can't help you. It's something you're going to learn and have to do for yourself. And that's my stuff. And that's actually the reason why, is because no one gave me a second chance on so many occasions. I did fall, and I did have to learn how to swim, get back on my feet, on my own bootstraps, on my own. So sometimes I become cold at heart. But I'm working through that, and I think galactically, on a galactic level, if in fact there is such a thing, that is the real solution to getting out of the crisis we're in, and that's forgiveness. We'll be right back. Now, if there's anyone that wants to get a DVD from me of my TV show, I am trying to make that available. I need someone right now to go to alexhansery.com, make a $5 bid on my eBay auction for a DVD, and I need to get that credit rating up from 3, because I've never really used eBay before, to at least 5. Once I get it at 5... over Christmas break, I'm going to get some of my DVDs together, pick some choice ones out, burn some, and send them out. Cause I've been getting a lot of requests for them, and I have not had the time. So I'm going to do that, and they're going to be about $5 each, $2 shipping handling, makes a total of $7. That makes a good Christmas gift. And, of course, if you can donate, for example, $5 for every month that you listen to the show, that would definitely make things easier here. So on the topic of forgiveness, all the situations sometimes, and anger and rage that we have felt in our hearts towards other people, one thing that I can't deny, and that is this universal truth. All my own personal travels, everywhere I've been, everything I've thought, year to year, your perspective upon life changes. And I believe as human beings, as a species, whether we like it or not, our destiny is to be in a forward momentum state of evolution. Returning to the light. Reclaiming our own... I don't want to say the word. I don't want it to have the wrong connotation. Want people to understand, but Godhood. Our place in heaven, our place with the universe. When I talk about the hot stove and a hand that touches it, as we as children learn the errors of our way to never touch a hot stove like that ever again, we learn cause and effect. And this is cause and effect. It is what you would call the philosophical debate of the problem of evil. And why does evil exist? Why does rage exist? Death exist? Murder exist? You've had a lot of people come back from Vietnam saying God does not exist as a result of the things that they saw on the battlefield and the way that their government treated and poisoned them and continues to do so today with a liberal, and I say the word liberal use of DU. You see, these people not believe in a God, and you understand that's part of the plan. People are becoming dehumanized. These things, this rage in our heart, all these things we're seeing on the planet are effects. There is a cause. If we keep our focus when it comes to solutions, hitting the artery of the problem, not the smokescreen issues, that's the only way. These things, these negative outcomes, in fact, almost seem to be, whether we like it or not, necessary to understand that what we are doing collectively, the apathy that pervades so strongly on this planet today, is wrong. It is not human, it is subhuman. It is abnormal. Normal is being a man, is doing what men do, and that is defend their family, stand up for the Bill of Rights, stand up for this country, understand the difference between an enemy, foreign and domestic, and be willing to fight that enemy head on, wherever they may be coming from. Of course, seeing the light for where it truly exists. And with that, I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, I'm Alex, reminding you there still is a war for your mind, but the ultimate truth still starts within.